We're going to start off with the situation of energy and electricity and the prices. The high prices haven't hit home yet because the increases, even though there's already been increases, the real increases are coming and will come probably in the month of November into people's inboxes in their email or through the post. That's when the price shocks will come. We'll see what happens with the energy credit from the government and how that assuages that. But Sinn Féin are saying the government aren't doing enough to protect customers out there and vulnerable people. They want a much wider and much more detailed disconnections ban starting pretty much straight away. Darren O'Rourke is TD for Meath for Sinn Féin. He's a spokesperson on Climate Action Communications Networks and Transport. I spoke to him shortly before coming in here and asked him to outline what their motion would say and how they feel the government isn't doing enough on this issue.
Yeah, it's not. The government's proposals, we argue, don't go far enough. They have a ban on disconnections, but it's very limited. In the first instance, it applies now from October to the end of March for a very small cohort of people. So vulnerable customers, and they're not financially vulnerable, but medically vulnerable. They're self-identified medically vulnerable. They're self-registered medically vulnerable. So it's a subset of a subset of a subset of a subset, if you know what I mean. And that's very restrictive. For the vast majority of everyone else, of bill pay customers, there is a ban on disconnections. It's for a three-month period. It kicks in on the 1st of December and it ends on the 28th of February. That's too short a period. We believe the ban on disconnections should apply to all bill pay customers from now until the end of March. And that reflects the fuel allowance period. Sinn Féin brought in legislation before the government kicked it down the road. Our legislation would have given effect to a ban on disconnections to be in place for the fuel allowance period. And most importantly, and this has been a hot topic in recent weeks, is we want to see that ban on disconnections extended to pay-as-you-go customers, because there's no protection for pay-as-you-go customers. The same protection that's there for bill pay customers, whether they be vulnerable or not vulnerable, isn't there for pay-as-you-go customers. And we know that many pay-as-you-go customers are both medically vulnerable, but not identified as that, and certainly financially vulnerable. So we believe that the ban on disconnections should kick in straight away. It should go until the end of March, and it should apply to all customers, bill pay and pay-as-you-go customers. The government's proposals don't go anywhere close to
you're
that.
You're not assured by the fact that, I mean, Ryan's seeking assurance from energy suppliers that households won't face disconnections this winter, pay-as-you-go included. And they're also making it as quick as easy as possible for struggling households to access additional needs payments through community welfare officers, which should also stave off and help those who are on pay-as-you-go.
Well, we just had news today, and anybody, I have to say, it sounds to me that every, you know, party leader and government minister and government spokesperson that comes out and talks about ease of access to exceptional needs payments have and must have no understanding of the exceptional needs payments system. We have reports today in the media that claims for exceptional needs payments have increased by 37%. From January to September this year. We can expect that to increase and increase again. Up to 66,000 payments have been made in that period. As I say, an increase of 37%. We know that it can take many weeks, acknowledged by the department itself, it can take many weeks to get a payment made. So that's not the type of response that we need. And I think there's an important issue of equity and fairness here. The protections that will be there for bill pay customers is that if your back is against the wall, if you're not in a position to pay, that you don't have the risk of the lights going out or the gas being turned off.
And so you wanted to come in straight away, effectively, whereas the government are saying it's from December to February. But the bills really haven't come true in terms of the amount of increases that people are going to face. The 1st of October was the date a lot of bills go up. The first bills won't be hitting until November. So the people who will be in trouble, and hopefully there won't be many of them, but the people who will be won't be in real trouble until at least December. Does that not cover it?
No, I don't believe that to be the case. First of all, we know that there are disconnections happening. They're in the region of over 1,000 domestic gas and electricity disconnections happened in the first 6 months of this year. That's in the region of, 170 disconnections per month.
But for people who haven't been paying over a sustained period, surely.
Yeah, on the basis of inability to pay, on the basis of, as I said, increasing numbers applying for exceptional needs payments, increasing numbers. We have it from the ESRI, we have it from the St. Vincent de Paul, increasing numbers faced with being at risk of poverty, being at risk of fuel poverty, at record levels. So when we're in a situation like that, I believe that the state needs to stretch itself to provide the necessary support. So I think it would be a quite incredible situation that the government would allow people to be disconnected. 170 this month, next month, 170 in the month of March, to be disconnected in the middle of a cost of living crisis, in the middle of an energy crisis, at a time when electricity bills have increased by over 130%. I think the state needs to stretch itself to provide those essential supports for people to ensure that they can keep the basics of the heat and light on this winter.
Okay, you've said in your statement that the government's refusal to put a cap on electricity prices is a big mistake or a major mistake. Are you still holding that position, given what we're seeing happening and unfolding in the United Kingdom? The government there deciding to cap prices for 2 years, and it led to turmoil in the markets because the amount of money was untold that the British Exchequer would have to pay for it, and all of a sudden they've had to do a major reversal announced yesterday by their new Chancellor.
Yeah, well, I don't think I don't think all of that is related to actually very little of it is related to the position.
I would suggest an awful lot of it, Darren, would be down to it, because it was an unfunded and unknowable amount of money that was committed to that project,
which spooked the markets. Not just to that, in fairness, not just to that, but I would make this point. They introduced their energy price cap at an earlier stage. I think we're in a different place now. We had ESB before the Climate Committee a couple of weeks ago, and they and others have acknowledged that the lack of supply or zero gas supply from Russia is essentially baked into the prices at this stage. It should not be. We don't expect that. We will continue in the sort of vein that we did over the summer period. There's no reason why that should be the case, and if it is the case, I would put it down to blatant profiteering on behalf of energy companies, and that's something which our government has resisted to tackle for so long. Sinn Féin in government would deliver on a windfall tax, on a solidarity tax. We're calling for that in our motion tonight. We need to tackle those excess profits. We've been calling for that in excess of a year. Government have been literally voting against such proposals at a European level during that period. So those two measures, the cap on electricity prices and bringing them back to summer 2021 levels, and the introduction of windfall taxes, will provide people
and,
with the type
and
of
the government would say
winter.
they're addressing that to the European Forum. A final point for you on a wider issue yesterday. There's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of weeks about Sinn Féin and about legal actions. The Taoiseach Daly O'Raddkar saying yesterday that at least three elected Fine Gael members have received legal letters from Sinn Féin figures. He also questioned why you're using legal threats as a strategy, he says, to stifle debate, echoing similar comments by the Taoiseach at the weekend. What's your response to these charges put to you by the leaders of both parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil?
Yeah, well, I think it's a complete distraction from those parties when there are far greater issues, I would say, that they should be focusing their minds on. But I would also make the point that everybody, regardless of their position in society, has the right to their good name. And if that is attacked by anybody, they have a right to defend themselves. And I don't think anybody should apologise for that. In fact, we might ask the question of, what has given rise to those legal cases? That should certainly be a focus of attention.
Would you concede, though, that it is a concern, particularly when it comes to the media, if robust, let's say, debate, and politics is a rough business, and a lot of rough things are said in the Dáil and elsewhere in the throes of hot political debate, that there may be a fear going forward that if I say this or if we investigate this, we may be on the end of a legal letter, and that has a chilling factor on proper investigative journalism?
No, actually, I think what it would serve to do is to ensure that standards are there to protect people, protect investigators, protect public figures, protect ordinary citizens, that those standards are maintained. And I think that's all that Sinn Féin has ever sought to do. And I would say this, if you go back through time, there's been plenty of experience of different parties, different individuals taking cases to protect their good name, and I think that's why we have a legal system and why we have those rights in place.
I take your point on that. We have Sinn Féin is not the first party to do it, but we have a situation in this country where many would say that the defamation and libel laws are quite restrictive and already are quite a bar on the investigative element of journalism. And we have seen some, and people who've been criticised in the Dáil by opposition parties, some major, very wealthy figures employing a tactic, effectively, of sending a solicitor's letter to anyone who asked any questions or anyone who does any investigations, designed to stifle and to stop investigative journalism into their affairs. You're saying this isn't what's going on with Sinn Féin, that it's not the same thing?
It's certainly not the case, and I think you can look at some of the, and I would say a relatively small number of cases that Sinn Féin have taken that have been successful, and I think there is as I say, that right to defend our good name either individually or as a party. And I think, it serves to ensure that standards are upheld, that there isn't, a freedom or a laxness or deliberate tactics employed by others to smear or tarnish or defame the good name of others. I think that's a standard, and I think a general principle that should be upheld by everybody.